And you know, this podium is a really good laxative. I have to take a shit, man. My clean date is April 25th, 1978. I don't say that to brag. I say it to let you know that that's the most important day of my life. The most important day of my life. That's the day Narcotics Anonymous and God, as I don't understand God, breathed life back into me. I was dying, man. If you're new here, we love you. We care about you. And we need you here. And we're so glad you're here. If you're coming back from a relapse, you have the most courage in the room. The most courage in the room. Because, you know, if you relapse, you got time, you relapse, and you've been talking some of that NA recovery shit, and you go out, man, you know what? It's hard to get back. Because people judge you. I'll say that. People judge you. But not all. And I would just have you get with your sponsor and just do one. Just ask your sponsor to do one question. What are you going to do different? What are you going to do different? I gave a really good talk in the shower this morning, man. I forgot. I forgot. God has a way of removing the bullshit. I grew up in a town, little town called Fresno, California, and I grew up on a ranch, you know, and I tried my first drug when I was about 15, 16, 14. The alcohol, we found some alcohol on the highway. Went down to this haystack, man, and drank it, you know, and the kids. What happened when I drank that alcohol, that drug alcohol, I walked home. And when I walked down to that haystack, man, I had the twos. Too tall, too short, too skinny, too fat, too something, man. And when I walked home, I felt just right. Just right, man. And so I proceeded to just add all kinds of, you know, I just added what I could add, what I at the time what I could get. And you know, this is a program of it's a disease of isolation and separation. And I want to tell you how that works for me. I isolated in five different areas. I isolated physically. I physically stayed away from anybody who was going to confront me about my use. Because I had to stay away from people who loved me, because only the people who loved me cared about how much I was using. You didn't give a fuck, man, as long as I was paying money. So I had to stay away from people who loved me. The second place I said it was emotionally. I stopped talking about my feelings. And as a child, I learned about values. And I learned that if I had a value and I acted that value out, I felt connected. I felt good. If I had my value was honesty and I told the truth, I felt pretty good about myself. So when I was using, I had my values went out the window. So my values began to separate from my behavior. I began to hurt people, cheat people, lie to people. And I had feelings. I had these feelings. Anger, rage, guilt, shame, anxiety, depression. So I had to use the thing that was causing the feelings to stop the feelings. That's how I was living. Next place I said was mentally. I stopped talking about my thoughts. See, because I was having crazy fucking thoughts, man. Crazy thoughts. Suicide, homicide. No one loves me. Everyone's out to get me. I had those kind of thoughts. I couldn't share those thoughts because I was afraid if I did, you would lock me up. Someone would. Next place that isolated was socially. See, socially, people started to stay away from me because I was crazy. I was unpredictable. I would do crazy shit, and people didn't want me around. You know, knock on the door, and they go, "Oh, be quiet. It's John. Act like we're not here. He'll go away." I was crazy. And the last place that I said it was spiritually. I for the sake of argument, I lost the ability to care about anybody or anything, and only care about the getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. Consequently, this behavior, I ended up in a penitentiary. And I went to my first meeting in Narcotics Anonymous in the Medium Security Penitentiary in California. And I went to the meeting because they gave you this chrono, man, that they would put in your jacket when you went to the parole board that said you did something while you were here. You know, I was playing handball, man, and smoking weed. That was my program. So I got to the. So they said you need to go to one NA meeting while you're here. I was there 14 months, or 15 months. So I said, okay. So I went to this NA meeting. I only went to see you at this meeting because they told me there were girls there. The women showed up for these meetings. That was a lie, but they got me there. and I went to smell the perfume. You know what I mean? And so they were reading what we read, and they came across this sentence and said, "Alcohol is a drug, period." And I thought, man, you out of your fucking mind, man. Alcohol is a beverage, man, like Dr. Pepper. It's not a drug. I don't like it anyway, so I can probably use it. And so it took me. I went. That was in 1973. It took me 5 more years to get here. So I moved around a lot. You know, I moved to Reno, and I got out of the penitentiary. Moved to Reno because there was no drugs in Reno. And then I had to move out of Reno because I met a woman. And we knew each other 10 days, had one meaningful relationship for 10 days, and got married. I'm sure you've never done that. I always say, if you're new, man, and you get into a relationship, and you've known that person 10 days, I say get married. It'll do one or two things, man. You'll get loaded, or you'll work steps. Guaranteed. So I ended up in the Jackson County Jail in Medford, Oregon, for an armed robbery and a burglary. They were looking at giving me 40 years in the penitentiary. 40 years in the penitentiary. And, you know, that scared me. And so, you know, and I almost died in the county jail kicking on stuff. Methadone habit, heroin habit, Valiums, Quaaludes. That was bad. Dad took me to the hospital. So I got back, and I was going to see my... I was going to phone, and I went to phone my mother to bail me out because I was going to run. So I called her and said, "Ma, this is your baby boy. I'm in jail, and I need to get out for a while, man. Can you bail me out?" She said no. You know that word that addicts hate. No. And I said, "Why not?" And she said, "I've been talking to Al-Anon." And I said, "Al who? Who the fuck is Al, man? I don't know Al. I know all your friends, I don't know Al." said, no, John. I said, what are these people at Alon telling you? They said, well, they told me the best way to help you is not to help you. And they hung up. Sure enough.
That's right.
So, I had to go to Plan B. I didn't know what that was, but I had to go to it. And so I'm walking back to my cell, and I walk past. This is how God works, man. I'm walking back to my cell, and there was a guy standing there, and he saw me walk past him. And he was there because he had a drug program he was running, and he came to see some guy who they wanted to put in the program, and the guy didn't want to go. So he was putting on his coat. He was getting relieved. He was putting on, as I walked by, 140 pounds. Half of that was hair. That's not going. That's not happening today. Tracks running up and down my arms. And he said, "Who's that guy?" And the nurse said, "That's a hopeless drug addict. He's going to the penitentiary for a long time." And he said, "I got a program for him. I want to talk to him." So they called me out. Now I didn't know it was a drug program. I thought it was my attorney, because I didn't need a drug program. I had been to drug programs, man, in L.A. and Frisco. I had been to drug programs. And what I found in a drug program was you got there and you look for the drugs and you start the program. You know what I mean? That's what I got. And so I didn't know that was the day I lived my whole life for. I didn't know that this guy had the keys to the gates of hell and he was going to let me out. I didn't know that. So I go. I walk into this room, and he says, "John, yeah." He said, "My name's Lloyd. I'm an addict. I've been clean 2 years." I said, "2 years? Oh, you're on parole, right?" He said, "No." I said, "You're on probation." He said, "No." I said, "You mean you're clean just because you want to be clean?" He said, "Yeah, just because I want to be clean." And isn't that the miracle of Narcotics Anonymous? I'm clean today because I want to be, not because I have to be. So he did something for me that no one had ever done before. He started talking to me about him. See, people have been talking to me about me my whole life, man. You need to do this, and if you do this, you need to do this. I didn't hear that shit. I turned that shit off, man, you know. I got to get that good night. Oh, yeah. And he started talking to me about him. He allowed me the dignity to relate. And it was a dignity, man. I said, "I've been there. I've done that. I shot them drugs. I do this." He used drugs. He hadn't gotten a memo yet that you don't be drug specific. He hasn't gotten that memo. Thank God. Anyway, so you know, he said, "I'm gonna take you home and show you a new way to live." Man, if there was anything I needed, it was a new way to live. So we went to this program called Freedom House. My lawyer came in and got the robbery dropped. Got to plead guilty to a burglary, which is what difficult for me to do, to plead guilty to anything. And so I went to this drug program. And there I learned about Narcotics Anonymous. We went to a lot of NA meetings. And I was there about 14 months. And I said, "You know what? I'm ready to go to work. I'm ready to go to work, you know?" And they told me, "No, you're not ready yet, John." And so I gave my best answer, you know? The best answer I could come up with was, "Fuck you." And I swear a lot up here, you know what I'm saying? I'm working on that. And so I said, "Take me back to jail." So now I knew the judge said if I didn't complete this program, he was going to send me to the penitentiary for 5 years. And I went back to jail hoping that they would. It was a bluff, and hoping that they would not call my bluff, and they did. And I went back to jail. And it was a good thing I did, because I used my last drug in the Jackson County jail. I we had a someone smuggled in some marijuana, and we smoked some weed and drank some homemade wine, and you know what? Nothing happened. Nothing happened. I didn't get high. And so the librarian would come in every day, and she'd ask, you might need a book, and so I said, yeah, let me have that old blue book there, Book of AA. I know what it. So I read it. And you know, some people might say, you know, people that are just, some people might say, well, John, you should have waited around 5 years. We'd have brought you a book. So I was a little bit desperate. Sorry. And I read that book, man. And it said, lack of power. That was our dilemma, man. That's what I was there. I was powerless, man. And I did the first three steps in jail that night while everyone was asleep. And went to court 2 days later, and the judge cut me loose. So I walked out of there with, and walked into Narcotics Anonymous, no treatment center. So the old timers got a hold of me, old timers from Los Angeles, and they just told me the truth. You know what I mean? They said, don't even think that for a minute that your problem is you can't stop. Don't think that for a fucking minute, man. That's not true, John. That has never been true, that you can't stop. Sometimes you stop two or three times a day. Your problem is you can't stay stopped. That's your problem. We're going to help you do that. We'll help you stay stopped one day at a time. Do what we do. Get what we get. And so that's what happened, man. I started staying clean. And my sponsor would take me around and all that stuff about isolation and separation, you know, the answer to addiction for me was connection. Connection. You know, the most important person in my life before I got clean, I called the connection. And in Narcotics Anonymous, I'm looking at my connection right here. Right, connection. When I can't find God, when I can't feel God, when I can't get a prayer past my fucking head, when I can't, I have to talk to you. I have to talk to you because you are my Savior. You are, man. I got the wife back. We had a little baby boy, and we started going to meetings, staying clean. Got a sponsor, and I started working steps. And I had about 90 days clean, and I woke up one morning, and my wife was at work, and I had that obsession was on me. Get loaded, that roar in my fucking head, that roar. And so I got on the phone to my sponsor. He was out of town. So I called this guy, this biker dude, man, named Jim D. And I said, Jimmy, I want to get loaded, man. I want to get loaded so fucking bad I can taste it. I want to get loaded, man. I don't know what to do. He said, you're going to stay home? I'm going to be over at your house in 15 minutes. So, okay. He came over, man. He had this big pink candle under his arm. And I said, what are you going to do with that candle? He said, we're going to do the third step. You got a problem with that? I said, well, he was a big old dude. I said, no. Okay. And so we went inside and we did that. We did a third step, man, you know. And you know, I'm looking at this awakening of the spirit. So I did a third step and nothing happened, you know. Well, except I didn't use that day, and I was working at Elmer's restaurant as a cook, man. And so because that's the only trade I knew from the penitentiary. I was a cook in there, and so you know I'm riding my bike to work. I'm down the bike trail, and some strange things happen. You know, I looked down and I saw the grass, and I'd never seen the grass that green, ever. It was wow. It's like I was on acid, man. And I looked up and I saw the sky, and I had never seen a sky that blue in my life. I was so aware. My awareness was so great. And I looked at the people coming down the bike path in front of me, and they had lost their edge. You know that edge that people have, man, that I want to stay away from people because they cut me with that edge. I hated people. And you know what? It wasn't there. And I realized that the obsession to use had been lifted. Then my spirit got awakened just for a second. And the obsession was gone. Never to have been returned. So I did pretty good, and then about three years. I want to talk about God. About 3 years later, I was really struggling with God. I was in kind of a spiritual desert, man, so I couldn't get a prayer past my head, you know, I went to see a Unity minister named Mark Buckley. And I said, he had been doing fifth steps for people in the program. So I went to Mark and said, you know, Mark, I'm having a hard time with God. I don't believe there is God. I don't believe that God's up there. I just don't believe it. And he said, very wise man, he said, how old were you, John, when you got your first concept of God? I said, well, I was probably 8. You know, my mom and dad would be nursing hangovers, so they'd send us off to with the neighbors in their Buick station wagon to this Pentecostal church, man, Assembly of God. People would fall down on the floor talking in tongues, man, humble alum. And an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old are in there scared to death. Scared to death, man. You know, of God, God's going to get us, man. And that was my conception, man. That was my first conception of God. And he said, well, that's interesting. He said, next time you have to make a major decision in your life, go ask an 8-year-old what you should do. He said, what? He said, go ask an 8-year-old what you should do. He said, John, you got a conception of God that's from an 8-year-old child. This is right next to Santa Claus. He said, you know, I've been doing fifth steps for you people for a long time. He said, and what I know is that this is a grow-up program, son. You got to grow up. And you got to grow your God up to meet your needs as an adult. And I went, wow. He changed the way I went about my life. I started going on search for God, for what works for me. And I hope you can do the same thing. And I hope you can understand that if you're still living off an 8-year-old's conception of God, you might have some problems. You might be having some problems with God. Because you're not 7 or 8. Anyway. So, I had about 4 sponsors in this program so far. 4 or 5. And I had a sponsor named Pepe. Pepe Acuna. One time I called Pepe on the phone and I was talking to him and I said, yeah, this is going on. He said, well, mijo, it sounds like you're powerless. I said, yeah, I am, you know, trying to agree with a sponsor. You know? And he said, well, then why don't you act like it? He said, why don't you act powerless? You can't change nothing if you don't act the way you're supposed to. When I first started using, I got information. I got information about how to use, what to use, what to do. I got information about every adult thing. And when I put that information into action, I got transformation. I transformed into what that information was when I took action. So in recovery, I get information about how to be an addict, a recovering addict, And but it does me no good unless I put that into action and get transformation. I transform into being an addict, a recovering addict. I can be a dope fiend. I can be a clean and sober dope fiend, man. You know, but what is that, man? That's just it's just another mask that I wear, man. Clean and sober dope. I'm a dope fiend, man. You know, I hear people actually say when they say I'm so and so, I'm a clean dope fiend. Really? Is that all you strive to be, man? Is a clean dope fiend? Man, there's so much more. There's so much fucking more. But you know, that's you got to figure that out yourself. It took me a while to do that. When I got to tell you, I want to talk about my daughter. Talk about relationships. My daughter, we had another little baby. I have two children. I have a son named Josh and a daughter named Jasmine. And I didn't know, had no idea how to be a father. No fucking idea how to be a father. And so some guy said, well, just try being your kid's sponsor. I said, no, that ain't gonna work. My kid don't need a sponsor. Well, he does because he's using it, but I'm not dead. So, my daughter thought when she grew up that my dad had touched her inappropriately when she was four. So I confronted my dad about it. My dad denied it. I asked a lot of my sister's friends, had my dad ever like hit on them? Or nope, never did. So, you know, I wasn't sure what to do. So when my father passed, and this doesn't sound really, but my daughter was mad at me because I went to his funeral because she felt like I betrayed her by going to his funeral. I couldn't understand that, but you know, that's how it is. So my daughter didn't talk to me for 14 years. 14 years. So I couldn't just let her be, you know. So you guys told me what I needed to do was I needed to send her an email or a text at least once a month saying, I love you, I'm your father, and I want to have a relationship with you. Call me. And I did that every month for 14 years. And man, there was a time, man, when I just didn't believe it was going to work. 14 years, long time. And one day, we had, Brenda and I had moved to Arizona, and we had bought another house, and I was getting some remodeling work done to it, and I was with my remodeling guy and contractor, and I was going to buy him lunch and talk about what I wanted him to do, and my phone rang, and it was my daughter. And so I said, the guy I was with, his name is Van Der Ay, he's a ex-Hells Angels, he's an interesting guy. I said, Van Der Ay, I haven't talked to this girl in 14 years, I don't know what to say. He said, well, try saying hello. I'm going to go on inside the restaurant, John, you have a good talk, man. And so I said hello, and she said, Daddy, I love you, and I want to have a relationship with you. She had me a daddy. She had me a daddy. And so she's just talking. And she says, Dad, how come I'm doing all the talking? And I said, well, Jazz, when you haven't heard your favorite song for 14 years and it comes on the radio, you just listen, baby. You just listen, man. Take it all in. And you know, we have a relationship today, man. That girl comes to my house, man, our house, and she for Thanksgiving every year, She comes down from LA, and she's a stand-up comic in Los Angeles. Yeah, and she I'm gonna brag a little about her. She wrote a Netflix pilot, man, that they gave her $125,000 for. Yeah, she's something, man. And so that relationship has been healed. It's in the healing process. And again, one more time, it awakened my spirit. You know what I mean? I believe a little stronger in that power that I call God. And I believe that things happen when they happen, when they're supposed to happen. And they don't happen when they're not supposed to happen. And when they don't happen when they're not supposed to happen, the worst thing I can do is try to force it. Fix, manage, and control. So, my son is, he's not using, supposedly, his mother's in the program. His mother's got 47 years. She's in a program, and she tells me, and she's living in LA, so she tells me he's not using, but I don't know. I have a feeling it is. But, you know, and he's having a hard time. He's having a hard time. What I wish for is you know, I hear speakers talking about their kids, man, you know, and their kids getting clean and going to NA and they're you know, they're doing good and they go to meetings together and shit. I want that, man. I want that. That's not my story, but I want that. And sometimes I get mad at God, you know what I mean? I want that, man. But he's doing the best he can. He's a really talented jazz fusion guitarist, and he doesn't do that. And he rides in his motorcycle, and delivers food from high end restaurants, and makes $4,000 a month. That's what he does. That's all he wants to do. And I want better, but our relationship is still strained, man. And you know, I keep wanting to make our relationship better, and I don't know how. I don't know how I can make it any better. So I just do the best I can, and I pray, and we talk. You know, we talk. He was living in Seattle for a while, and he was feeling suicidal, and I called him on the phone and said, I heard from your mother you're feeling suicidal, and what's going on, and have you tried this, have you done this? And he said, Dad, I don't need a sponsor. I'm not one of your NA guys. And I said, I'm your father. That supersedes sponsor, bro. I'm your father. And you talking about dying? That supersedes that. You know, so. And you know, and Brenda and I talked, and I was going to make room in my house for him and find him a job. And, you know, I was going to do all that stuff, man. I was going to fix him. You know what I mean? I could find him a job, get him into a treatment center. I was going to fix him. And he said, no, I don't want. I'm gonna move to LA with my sister. So that's what we did. And we talk, but our conversations are not what I want it to be. But I'm still available for him. And I just have to be patient, man. And one day, God will move in the way I want God to move, and that's not now. I've experienced some losses in this program. I lost my sponsor. My sponsor name was Jack White for a while, and I had Jack. Jack got cancer, and he was living at my house. He was in our house in Arizona, and he got cancer. And so we were doing hospice at my house. And so Jack would be laying in his bed, and sometimes he'd kind of go into a coma, and then he'd come out of it going. And so what I got to do for my sponsor, because he had done so much for me, what I got to do is, I would go into his room, and I would get in the bed with him. He he was a really frail little dude, man. And I would hold him, you know. They didn't teach me. Before I came from the streets of Fresno, man, you didn't hold somebody, man, when they were dying. You didn't do that shit. But I love this man. This man saved my life many times. And so I would hold him, and I would put my phone up to his ear and play music for him, because he loved music. And he liked Aretha Franklin and Van Morrison. Yeah, me too. And so I would play that for him. And sometimes he would smile, and sometimes I'd get a smile out of him. And he finally passed, and I got to say everything to him that I wanted to say to him. I got to say everything to my dad that I wanted to say to my dad. I got to say everything I want to say to my mother when my mother passed. And Narcotics Anonymous gave me that gift, the gift of being able to say what I wanted to say. And I love NA for that, man. You know, I remember when I was 39 years clean, I had a stroke. It was an ischemic stroke, so it was a brain stroke. And I couldn't hardly walk. I couldn't eat. I couldn't swallow. So they had to take me to the hospital. And I had the stroke on a Saturday, and I didn't get to the hospital till Tuesday because I wasn't copping to it. You know, I'm all right. You know, I couldn't talk. And so. So I went to they had to teach me how to walk again, talk again, swallow again. My thinking was really off, and I remember being in the hospital, and the nurse came and said, "You know, you've got some guys here, man. They claim to be your family. They want to see you." I said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, one of them's black." I said, "That'd be my sponsor." One of them's black. So they all came in, and it was just. I remember waking up out of a sleep, and I heard a voice saying, "What are you grateful for?" And I'm trying to figure out who's talking, man. So what are you grateful for? And I said, "Well, shit, I don't know. I had a stroke. I don't know if you've heard lately, but I've had a stroke, man." Even on the current events, but I hear it again. So I said, "Well, let me see. I've been doing this game for 39 years, man. Gratitude list for 39 years because." Gratitude is the answer for depression. So I said, "Well, you know, I'm not blind. Some people go blind when they have a stroke, and I can still walk, not very well, but I can still walk, and I'm alive, and I'm fucking alive, man. And so that means, I guess that means that there's something for me to do, and so." My sponsor came in and said, "The blessing is in the lesson. The blessing is in the lesson." And so he told me that to look for the blessings. And so that's what I did. I didn't know how to do that very good. That's what I did. And so, I remember I'd been out of the hospital about 6 months, and I was going to see a speech therapist and different therapists, and I had a friend call me from Portland. His name is Danny Dean. He's a great guy, and so Dan said. I said, "Dan, how you doing, man?" He said, "John, I'm in a hospital. I had a stroke." So what I was able to do was I was able to do Narcotics Anonymous. I was able to say, you know, Danny, here's what happened when I had my stroke. You know, I was able to share my story with somebody who needed to hear my story, and it wasn't about drugs. I was able to share about my experiences, to share our story. My story is the most valuable thing that I have today. My story. Because it's my experience. Because you can't argue with my experience. You can argue with my opinion, but you can't argue with my experience. My experience is mine. And yours is mine. And so I was able to share my experience with my stroke with Dan, and we talked on the phone and cried and we got through it. And the lesson is that the answer to my dilemma is to help you out of yours. That's the deal. So I'm not gonna make it, man, like an hour. I think. It's a long fucking time, huh? I just wanna shout out to those the people who have spoken before me, man. Great shares, man. Thank you so much for sharing, for opening your hearts, sharing with us. I want to read you something. Is that for me, man? Saying get off. This is one. You know, our literature is we have the best literature of all the 12-step programs, bar none, best, very best. So I want to read something to you. It says, we are being changed. Not only have we heard about the miracle of recovery, we are becoming living, breathing examples of what the power of the NA program can do. The spiritual life has ceased to be a theory we hear about in meetings. It is now becoming a tangible reality. We can see a miracle simply by looking in the mirror. If you're looking for a miracle, man, go look yourself in the mirror. The God of our understanding has taken us from spiritually unconscious, hopeless addicts to spiritually aware, recovering addicts, eager to live. That happened to me. And it can happen to you. You know, people say, 46 years, John, 46 years. It doesn't make me special. What's special is my God. What's special is Narcotics Anonymous. It ain't me, because all I did was the work. That's what I did, and I did enough drugs to get here, and I did enough work to stay here. And that's it. I'm not one of them spiritual giants. But I do okay. I'm living in Arizona, man. When we left Arizona, it was 78 degrees. We touched down in Baltimore and it was 27 degrees. I said, baby, I'm going home, man. Fuck this. It's too cold, man. It's just too cold, man. It's not fair. It's just too cold. A 50 degree drop. And so, man. I had to buy a coat, man. I didn't have a coat. So anyway, you know what? I think I'm done. Thank you so much, man, for putting up with me, and thank you so much. I want to thank the committee for asking me to speak here. You guys are great, man. The hospitality is wonderful, and I love you. Namaste.